Olivia Culpo here to tell you all about the launch of the new Abercrombie Spring Denim Collection, made the way denim should feel. Their denim has always been a staple in my wardrobe and has a wide range of fits, styles, and washes. Every jean is available in both their classic fit and viral curve love. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
If you know you need boundaries, but you still feel guilty, anxious, or afraid every time you try to set one, this conversation is for you. Today, we're talking about why shame keeps people stuck and how to set boundaries that actually feel safe and sustainable. Now, today, I have a very, very special guest with me today. Her name is Karen Anderson, and she helps people understand shame and build boundaries rooted in self-trust, not guilt. I'm so glad to have you here, Karen. I really want to get into this right away. Now, why does shame make boundaries feel so threatening, even when we know we need them?
So I see shame as an experience that has been thousands of years in the making, right? It is not just this emotion that we feel occasionally. Shame is, I think it was an evolutionary adaptation that was made somewhere along the way, so that when we lived in tribes, if someone was doing something that would threaten the lives of the tribe, right, threaten the future of the tribe, then that person was out, right? And that is basically what shame does. Shame disconnects us from ourselves, and it disconnects us from others. Right, we don't live in caves anymore, and yet we still have this experience, right? And this experience is partly physiological, right? We have the way it feels in our body to feel ashamed, which is for me usually like a feeling of curling up, a feeling of hot face, feeling of wanting to hide. Breath gets shallow, right? Paying attention to, okay, this is shame. This is my experience of shame. And so there's that physiological wiring that just happens when we experience shame. So we have this evolutionary impulse, let's say, that has over time created this ability for our bodies to have that experience. We don't like Most people don't like it, but it happens, right? And it happens so quickly, and it's often so painful that it can create or cause us to have a trauma response or a survival response, right? The five Fs, fight, flight, freeze, fawn, and flop. So it's this experience that we have, right? It's made up of that physiology and those sensations. It's made up of our thoughts that we're having. Sometimes we're aware of them, sometimes we're not. It's the messaging, it's the socialization, right? And so, as I said, we no longer live in caves, but the experience of shame has, in many cases, been weaponized and used to control us. Right, by institutions and culture. You know, it's different cultures have different flavors, right? But it's there, right? And for a long time, some people would say it served us.
Yeah.
And I kind of don't think it has, but right, it's true. We've had this experience, and so all right, let's say we needed to have it for a while. But I see it as kind of like a vestigial organ. Yeah. Right, like an appendix, right? We're born with an appendix. Back when we lived in caves and we ate tree bark, we needed the appendix. It was much bigger and it served a purpose for digesting and helping us process tree bark, or whatever it was that we were eating. And as humans evolved, right, our appendix has gotten smaller. It's still used for certain things, but it doesn't serve the same purpose that it once did. And it can make us sick. And thankfully, we have ways of surgically removing it, but we don't have that for shame, right? We can't just say, okay, we don't need this anymore. Let's get rid of it. But I suspect that someday maybe in 1,000 years we won't have an appendix, and maybe we will evolve out of this physiological reaction of shame.
Yeah, it's so important. Now,
so
why do
I think having that understanding of like what shame is from that perspective makes it so that, oh, it's not just this me thing, like there's something wrong with me, right? Because, you know, at its core, shame is the belief that there is something inherently wrong. I'm not worthy. I am bad. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we're aware of that, of those thoughts, but most of the time we're not. We're just sort of operating from this perspective that that's the truth of who I am.
Yeah.
And those things, right? I just want to point out this one last piece, which is that shame becomes internalized.
Yes.
And the way that that happens, again, is when we're children, babies even, is that our nervous systems are scanning the environment, which is what they're designed to do to keep us safe.
Yeah.
And something happens in our families, or, you know, it could even be something that's not that big of a deal.
Right.
But that individual nervous system notices something, says, okay, this isn't okay. Something's wrong. If this means that there's something wrong with my caregivers, that's way worse than me believing that there's something wrong with me. It's safer to actually believe that I'm the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this isn't like the logical conversation that you're having. It's just happening.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
you're not
no.
logically aware of, oh, this is what's happening. So if over time we are not corrected in that assumption,
yeah,
every time something happens, right, and then the pattern builds and we're not corrected, actually this isn't a you problem, this is, right, we're not taught how to think of ourselves,
yeah,
right, so over time then it just becomes internalized, so it feels like it's us that's believing it, not this thing that was placed on us.
Exactly. So true. You hit it on the ball. Now, why do people feel selfish or bad when they're trying to protect themselves?
Well, we've been taught that it's not okay. Especially women, right? Let's talk about women, right? Women are taught that they are to take care of everyone else. I mean,
yeah.
And it's like, yes and no. It's like it's the water we're swimming in. So it's just what we see. It's not like people are saying, okay, it is your job to take care of everybody. But it's modeled for us. And over time, right, where the places where we've been excluded tells us that, the places where we're included tells us that, right? We're constantly scanning and saying, if I say no to this, I might be kicked out of the tribe and to die. Sometimes I joke and I'm like, you know, if I say no to this request from a friend, I might end up living in a van down by the river where I'm going to die alone, right? So it's like it's happening that quickly.
Yeah.
And so we're, you know, and it makes sense.
Right.
It makes sense that even though we're not thinking I'm going to die if I say no, the body is like, yep, we're going to die.
Yeah. That's so true. Now, how does shame show up as people pleasing and over explaining or, you know, staying silent?
So I'll just share that I have what I call my little box of shame. And inside are my three core shame beliefs about myself, one of which is simply that I'm bad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That one came in real young. And so now when it comes to taking care of myself, if I have this belief that I'm bad, then I don't deserve that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
One of my other shame-based beliefs is that I'm a selfish, spoiled brat. That one came in a little later.
Yeah.
And if that's true, then I don't deserve to have what I want.
Right.
Because selfish is bad.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm bad is underneath selfish, spoiled brat. Right. And then the third one, which came in a little bit later, is that I'm a pathetic loser.
Mm.
So somebody who believes that and is living from that, right? And yours might be different. Somebody else's might be different. Another one of mine that's not as strong, but is, you know, equally powerful. I'm stupid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
I don't know what I want. I'm worthless. I'm nothing, right? Like, I'm ridiculous. Like, it can even be very subtle and sometimes kind of humorous too, right? Like, God damn, being so ridiculous, Karen, you know, like rolling my eyes, contempt, right? Like, so all of that gets in the way of us having what we want, right? Being able to say no and take care of ourselves and right, operate in the world as autonomous beings.
So true. You know, the reason why I was smiling on some of them is because this is something that we constantly grew up with. These are common things that were said all the time, you know, and if it wasn't said to us, it was said to someone that we knew and someone close by us. And I remember talking to somebody and I was like, you can be so much more. I don't understand. And I said, why do you think of yourself like that? And, you know, she looked at me and she said, and she had an alcoholic father. And she said, you know, and when he was a sweet man and a very caring man until he drank. And when he drank, he said not so nice things. And he would say not so nice things to her when he drank. And she goes, when you hear certain things all the time, you start to believe them. And that's all she said to me. And I got it, you know, and I didn't, you know, she just all her life, her father said these negative things about her, you know, and she grew up thinking that that's all she was, you know, that's what she was. Because it was said to her over and over and over again throughout her childhood, you know, and it didn't matter if he was drunk or not. She still is still embedded in her brain. And then she thought that's the person who she was. And she and her behavior, you know, she exemplified that in her behavior and self-worth and not trying to really, you know, go to the next level in life because she didn't think she deserved it.
And that's why shame is so insidious because, I mean, I remember, I think it was probably with Brene Brown back in, I don't know, 2010 or something like that, when, you know, she had her big TED talk about shame. And I remember that was sort of like an awakening moment for me. And then I was like, all right, I'm going to get rid of shame. I'm going to deal with this and I'm not going to have shame anymore. And the more I tried, the more I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what was, and then that like reinforced, okay, there must really be something wrong with me because I cannot stop thinking that I'm a pathetic loser.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the insidious part is that shame keeps us from being able to see that there could be something different. And just like, I mean, I just like you, I had, you know, with the person that you mentioned, right? People would say to me, how can you believe? Oh, don't believe that about yourself. You're so much more than that. What's like, how come you can't think more positively? Blah, 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 right? Yeah. And that just reinforced there must be something wrong with me because I can't.
Exactly.
And that's like what I mentioned earlier before we started recording. That's what the six N's are for.
Right.
Is for now, those moments.
Yeah. why do capable, self-aware people struggle with boundaries the most?
All of what I just said.
Yeah.
Right? It's if I say no, something bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? It's a risk. Right? Mm-hmm. When it comes right down to it, it's this relationship might go away.
Yeah.
And if this relationship goes away, what does that say about me?
Yeah.
So of course we don't say no when we want to say no.
I
of
think
course
that was
it feels fraught.
Yeah. I think that was, when I wanted to say no and I said yes anyway, and I didn't put down boundaries. I think deep down inside it was the fear of being rejected by that person, losing that person, care or love or relationship, and forcing myself to do things I didn't really want to do.
You said something earlier. You were like, why do sometimes people over-explain? I think you said, because it's interesting too how, yes, in important relationships, that's one thing. And then there's relationships that aren't, really matter. They're acquaintances or just some random stranger on the internet, right? And occasionally, right, I'll be, on TikTok or, whatever. And, or I'll have posted something on Facebook and, somebody will come into the comments and say something. I notice my trigger. I notice the urge to explain myself, right? And it's like, explain yourself, young lady, right? That, I mean, that's what's like living in there. And with a stranger on the internet who I don't care about, but yet there's still that I have to explain myself, right? But if we can catch ourselves, right, and unshame, that's like the ultimate, right, is we're not going to get rid of the shame fully yet, I hope. I don't know, maybe someday we will. But how can we relate to it differently now so that I can see myself being triggered by a comment on the internet, choose not to explain myself, and be okay? Or choose to explain myself, get into a icky situation that I don't want to be in, and then unshame that and tell myself, okay, I did that. Yep. Doesn't, it's okay.
And I like that because there are so many times that people have said, you don't need to explain yourself. And it's so true. Why do we need to explain? We don't need to explain
But we're
ourselves.
wired to. Right? Like if people will say, well, don't compare yourself to others. Well, we are wired to compare so that we know that we're, where am I in the hierarchy? Am I safe here or not? Right? So of course we compare ourselves to other people. And yet, right, like all the self-help and personal development is say no, set your boundaries, don't compare yourself, don't explain, right? And then you're like, yeah, but but I
True.
need to. I feel the urge. What's going on?
What changes when someone understands shame instead of fighting it?
You change your relationship to it. So, right, I show my little box of shame. I've had this box on my desk since, I don't know, about 2017, maybe. And inside, as I said, I don't know if this is going to be a video, but I have three little pieces of paper in there. I would have my little shame stories. And we talked before about internalized, right? Having shame be internalized. And right, these things in this box used to live in here, in here, right? So, okay, weird little personal story. I was actually sitting at this desk one day thinking about whether or not my mother or my grandmother had ever felt like a pathetic loser, because in my mind, that just couldn't be possible. Like, I'm the pathetic loser, weak, ineffectual, like, right? Like, that's the message I got my whole life. And they weren't, right? They were like, strong and whatever to me. But I'm sitting here thinking, I wonder if they ever felt that way. And I thought a little bit about my mother's life and my grandmother's life. And I know that there was a lot of bad stuff that happened. But I could, there was enough that I know about their lives that I could say, you know what? Actually, I am guessing at that point in my mother's life and at that point in my grandmother's life, they probably felt like pathetic losers. And I'm sitting here, right? And I go, oh my God. And I actually like slam my hands down on the desk and I'm like, oh, it's not actually mine. I'm like, it didn't start with me. Feeling like a pathetic loser isn't just mine. And in that moment, I was like, oh. And the weird, gross part of the story is that later that night, I actually got sick to my stomach. And I had this vision I was laying there on the bathroom floor because I literally think it was like a purge, right? Because I didn't, it wasn't like I had food poisoning or something. But I pictured women with boxes, and I pictured like one woman like pulling the box out, you know, and it's say it's like wrapped with gold paper and a green bow, and she hands it to the next woman who takes it and tucks it in without even thinking about it, right? And then it comes out again, and this time it's a silver wrap with a blue bow, and she hands it to the next woman. And inside the box is the same stuff. It just looks different on the outside, right? But it keeps getting passed down and internalized and passed. And so I'm laying there on the bathroom floor, having just been sick, like picturing this in my head. And I'm like, and then we take the box and we put it down. We don't put it in here anymore, and we don't pass it on. And so that was an act of externalizing my shame. Changing my relationship to the shame. It's no longer in here, although sometimes it is, but right, it's here where I can see it and look at it. And that's one way, right? That's one sort of tangible practice that you can do is to externalize the shame. And that's a reminder always that it's, oh, that's over there.
I love that. I love that so much. And what's one small boundary someone can practice today without triggering panic or guilt?
So the way that I like to express or, you know, talk about boundaries is that they are the rules for us. They are not rules for other people. And one way that I love to express a boundary for myself when I'm by myself and I'm right, think somebody has just asked me something or whatever. This is mine. That's not mine. Right.
I like that.
This literally is my boundary. It's one of my boundaries, right? It's a physical boundary. And it's mine. This is mine. Right? And that stuff out there is not mine, right? And so I am a huge fan of being, yes, we can have thoughts and feelings, right? But when we can combine movement with a thought and an emotion, right? It's that much more powerful. So as an example, my mother wants to move from Maine, where she lives, to Connecticut. And she's going to need some help. And I have to decide what's mine, what I've decided is mine that I want to help her with. What are things maybe that I'm willing to do? I wouldn't be excited to do, but I'm willing to do them. And I'm not going to then complain and say somebody has a gun to my head and I have to do this. No, I'm willing to do this. And then there's going to be the hell no things, right? And I find that where most people struggle with boundaries is not with tasks, although it can be, it is with emotional caretaking, where I am taking responsibility for your emotions, and I refuse to do that. That is a hell no. That is my boundary. I don't do that. And it can be a slippery slope at times.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? But boundaries are, we can look at it two ways. One is we can make a request of somebody, right? I can ask you, please don't smoke in my car, or please don't call me every day, whatever, right? Wait, please don't do this. But you know what? They might just say, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to call her anyway. And if you keep answering the phone when you've t asked them not to, you're reinforcing that you're not enforcing your boundary. Your responsibility there, what's yours, is to not pick up the phone. They get to call you all day long if they want to, right? And you get to decide either I'm not picking up, I'm blocking their number, like whatever it is, right? That's the boundary. And yeah, what will get in the way of that is our fear. If I don't answer the phone, my mother will disown me and kill me. And right, it feels that way. If she brought me into the world, she'll take me out. you know?
So true. How can someone tell the difference between guilt from conditioning and a true no?
Say that again.
How can someone tell the difference between guilt from conditioning
Okay.
and true no, a true intuitive no?
Okay. So I think a lot of us think of guilt as it's this awful feeling, and we call it guilt, but it's actually not guilt.
Right.
It is fear. When you think of guilt in like the textbook or, you know, dictionary definition, right? It is when you've done something wrong according to laws or rules or guidelines or whatever, right? Like if you break the law and you are caught and convicted, you are guilty.
Right.
But here's the thing, right? Let's say you are a single mom and you don't have enough money,
right?
And your kids are hungry. And you go to the store and you steal food and
right.
you're caught and you're convicted and you are declared guilty. You might not actually feel guilt.
Right.
And I think it's really helpful for us to understand that distinction.
Yeah.
That, so to bring it back to the more personal, like, okay, why do I feel guilty at times? It is, the way I like to define guilt is when I act out of alignment with what I value. Not, we're not talking about the like stealing here. We're talking about our personal stuff that we're doing, not like, oh, I'm going to steal something or
right.
speeding or going through a red light. These are like our personal values, our personal rules or laws or whatever you want to call them, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is that we are defining them. It's not I'm acting out of alignment with what you value.
Yeah.
It's what I value. And so when that's why, I mean, I think values work is huge. A lot of people do values work. It's really important. Our values can, you know, shift and change over time.
Yeah.
But our values become the basis of our intentional identity. And that then informs the boundaries we set. Because,
right.
I mean, I like to think of it as that our boundaries are our values in action.
Yes.
So I don't know if I answered the question.
Oh, you did. You did.
Okay.
You did. What do you say to someone? Go ahead. Finish.
I just want to say one more thing about guilt. I'm trying to remember who it was who said this. And I probably should have looked it up so I could have just read it to you. But it's I've heard it expressed that when we feel that icky feeling because we've said no to our mothers or whatever,
yeah,
what we're experiencing is her disappointment.
Yeah.
Right. She's putting it on us. It's her thing, not ours.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I said it inelegantly. I wish maybe if I'll get the quote and I can send it to you later and you can put it wherever you're going to put it, but cause it's really good. But
no,
anyway,
I like that. It's so true. But it's so true. What do you say to someone who fears boundaries and will lead to that? It'll lead to rejection or it'll lead to being unloved.
Well, that's a huge question. It's, again, it depends on who we're setting the boundary with and how important or how, you know, with the priority that we put on that relationship.
Yeah.
And so the question is how, what was the question?
What do you say to someone who fears boundaries and
okay.
that afraid that it leads to rejection or being unloved?
Yeah. So this comes back to the six N's.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want to do is we want to notice, that's the first N, right? We're noticing that I feel uncomfortable because I'm about to set a boundary, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're pretty good at I think most people are good at noticing.
Mm-hmm.
Then we name it. This is fear. This is anxiety. This is shame. This is guilt. This is disappointment, whatever it is, right?
Right.
But it's fear, right? And so I'm naming it. I'm afraid to set boundaries with my mom. And the next N is to normalize. And that's where we say, given all of the conditioning I've had, given our cultural and generational, right, thousands of years of conditioning, right, that's not just my past 60 years, but the past thousands of years, right?
Yeah.
Of course I'm scared.
Yeah.
It makes all the sense in the world that I'd be terrified of this.
Right.
So in doing that, we unshame, we take the shame layer off,
yeah.
and we say, this isn't actually a me problem. And in so doing, right, we create a moment for ourselves of safety.
Yeah.
Of like, okay, yeah, this is hard and I'm scared, but I'm not going to tell myself there's something wrong with me because I'm scared.
Yeah.
So, because that extra layer of shame that we put on makes it 10 times worse, makes it even scarier, because we're coming at it from, I'm bad if I do this.
Right.
So it makes sense that I feel scared. It makes sense that I'm afraid that I'm going to lose this relationship. And I might.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, right, there's other tools, right, to address that. But let's get through the six N's, right? So notice, name, normalize. We can narrate. We can say to ourselves or write down. It can be helpful, or talk to a friend or a coach or whoever,
yeah,
therapist. To narrate, every time I go to set a boundary with my mother, my heart starts to pound and my brain fills with all these thoughts, and I ruminate and I can't stand it. And I notice that, you know, I find it difficult to breathe and my legs get weak and I just want to pull the covers up over my head.
Yeah.
Right. I'm narrating the experience of this.
Right.
I'm noticing, like, right, I'm in touch with these sensations that I really hate, but okay,
yeah,
I'm allowing them to be here as much as I can.
Exactly.
You know, and then, okay, what do I need in this moment? Maybe I do need to just go in bed and pull the covers over my head and, you know, tell myself that this makes sense. Right. And then what's next?
Right.
Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's, I need another 10 minutes or another hour or another 24 hours.
Yeah.
Right.
100%.
And then we might set the boundary or we might not.
Right.
And in that moment, we can also then say, all right, I didn't do it this time. That's okay.
Right.
It makes sense that I didn't. It's okay that I'm scared.
Yeah.
And that practice, time over and over and over again, helps change our relationship to the fear, the guilt, the shame.
Yes.
And it's also, right, there's, you know, expressions that I hate and love at the same time, like, you know,
yeah,
there's no growth outside your comfort zone. Well,
yeah,
okay, but you know what? My comfort zone, I need it. Right? Like, maybe it's not shameful to have a comfort zone. Maybe,
right,
if I knew that my comfort zone was actually safe, that I've,
yeah,
created a comfort zone, I could step out of it because I know I can go back.
Exactly.
Right? So, I forget what I was going to say.
You're going over the ends, and then you were talking about, you know, the comfort zone. It's okay, because we can go out of it and we can go back into it.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. Yes. So, right. So it's sort of like, okay, I'm about to do something that I know my nervous system's not going to like.
Right.
And I'm going to take one step down that uncomfortable path or that uncertain path, because I want to end up in a different place than the place that I've been living for however long I've been living, right?
Yeah.
Right? The path to freedom, or the path back to shame.
Yeah.
Right? Because the path back to shame is very familiar.
Right.
I also love this analogy, right? I like to think of it like we're on a well-lit superhighway, right? It's six lanes wide. There's no speed bumps. There's no tolls. It's lit. You can see, and you just speed down that road. Like, it's so easy, right?
Yeah.
And then when we decide, okay, you know what? I don't like where that fast road takes me.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, now I guess I need to turn into the jungle where there's no road, right?
Yeah.
And no path. And I have to get my machete out and I need to start hacking through the wheat, you know, through the brush and the leaves and the trees and whatever, and like create a path. That's, you know, and sometimes it's like people don't like to hear that. We all want the magic pill, right? But
Yeah, magic wand.
but here's what I have found is that getting out that machete and doing that work can be safe and fun.
Yes, 100%. Now, if someone practices one thing this week, what should they remember when shame shows up?
Of course, I feel this way. It makes so much sense that shame is what I'm experiencing right now. Hello, of course. Right? And you can see I'm putting my hands on my chest, right? Any kind of contact, connection that we can make to ourselves. I mean, as I do it in this moment, I'm attuned enough to myself, I can feel what it feels like, right? And I mean, my eyes are actually a little watery right now because I'm feeling that. And it's nice and I like that, right?
Yeah.
So that's the one thing, is whether it's shame or guilt or fear or any of those, anxiety even, right?
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Of course.
I love it.
There's nothing wrong. Nothing's gone wrong here. This isn't actually a me problem. I don't like it, right? But
yes,
makes sense.
100%. Now tell me about the services that you provide and what you do.
So I offer one-on-one coaching. And I am also in the process of revamping something I call Shame School, which I've run 3 or 4 times in the past couple of years. And it was a 3-month sort of intensive program with a call every week. And I have expanded it into what I'm calling the Shame School community. And it's going to be more of an open-ended thing with several calls a month, but more like lessons and practices and tools in a community forum called Heartbeat. So that people can sort of go at their own pace, but then also have the added support of the calls and the community, right? That, you know, people share and can talk amongst themselves in the community. And that's gonna start on March 1st.
I love it. I love it. Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, I mean, I do a lot of writing. Writing is my first and foremost love.
Yeah.
And I do share a lot on Substack, as well as I do have a newsletter as well. So, and
awesome.
I, you know, I'm not always selling stuff in there. It's most of the time I'm answering questions and, you know, providing tools and that kind of thing.
I love it. Now, where can people find you? Your website again is what?
KCLAnderson.com.
I love it. And what social medias are you affiliated with?
Mostly Facebook. I know. I kind of like, okay, I'm old. But, you know, I don't know. I never like really caught on to the Instagram, and I am on TikTok, but I've done a lot, and then I stop and then I go back. So
yeah,
but
I love it. I love it. Now, this is such a reminder that boundaries aren't about pushing people away. They're about staying connected to yourself. Karen, this was amazing. And I thank you for this conversation. I think, you know, today's conversation was so needed. There are so many people out there, and, you know, from people who contact us all the time, they send, you know, emails, and they send, you know, they want to hear about boundaries. They want to hear about, you know, saying no. They want to hear about emotional healing, because so many people have gone through so many different types of trauma for so many different reasons. And a lot of it, you know, has to do with, you know, growing up, you know, the things that were told to us, the, you know, boundaries, saying no, the shame, you know, the things that were said to us that were negative, that turned into shame that we carried throughout our entire lives. And you've gone over some really great tools and strategies today that I think will be so helpful for so many people. And all I want to do is just say thank you because your information today was so valuable and so precious. And I think a lot of people are going to get a lot of positive impact from this episode. So I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show and to share your wisdom and to share your knowledge and to share your own experiences in this area. And I just really value your information and value, and I really appreciate you.
Thank you. I have done podcasts, my own podcasts in the past, but I appreciate all of the people like you who are doing podcasts like this because it's that's your passion, right?
Yeah.
Like that's what you excel at. And I'm like, I don't really want to do a podcast, so. I find the work that the people like you do to be amazing, and I very much appreciate like what you do to build that because it is important.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Well, this has been an amazing podcast, and I really thank you so much. And I look forward to possibly having you on the show again. And I just want to say thank you once again.
Oh, thank you.
You have a great day.
You too.
Thierry Henry is Betway Sports Ambassador. And for all new customers, bet £10 and get £40 in free bets. Download the Betway app today. 18 plus T&Cs apply. Bet the responsible way. Gamblerware.org.